Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hurry into Menards and save big money. Stock up on water softener Salt for softer skin and cleaner clothes. Diamond Crystal is the perfect choice of salt to minimize water softener tank residue. It helps your soaps and detergents clean better while increasing the life of your appliances and plumbing. Save big on Diamond Crystal products at Menards. And don't forget to check out the flyer on Menards.com for all the great deals happening now.
Save big money at Menards.
Live from a bunker in the heart of the Ozarks, a podcast that says amen like those hot people popping online, it's Sif Pop. Literally popping online. Literally Sif popping online.
Yep.
Welcome to Sif Pop Weekly, streaming live most Saturday mornings. We're available to download later in your podcast feed, unless, of course, you're a patron.
Patrons get perks.
Patrons get those perks.
Go to the Firo.
I'm your host, Aaron Dicer, and he means more to me than my precious clocks. It's Andrew Ormsby, ladies and gentlemen.
Ahoy!
Each week we'll chat about movies, TV, and whatever else from the pop culture universe is on our minds. Ian, please welcome our guest this week. In the moonlight, he almost looks like a real boy. It's Ian Whittington!
Oh, which parts don't? Give me some specifics.
It's the lighting. It's really the lighting.
It's just the moonlight.
Yeah,
you know,
that's fair. That's
when
fair.
The moon hits your eye.
Like a, yep, got it.
You're good.
Womp womp.
It is great to have you back, Ian.
It's great to be back in the
room. Not only back on the show...
Mm-hmm. I'm in his space.
You may have heard our guest that Ian and I have in the studio with us this morning. We do have a little puppers, and she is picking this time to whine a little bit. Mm-hmm. I don't know if it's coming through or not, but I did want to bring her up because she also is walking around a little bit. And if she unplugs something...
Oh, yes. That is very likely.
We could go away very, very quickly.
And Aaron said, little, this dog is a horse. I could disappear. I could actually...
I was going to say, if it's a little puppy, could you pick it up and show everybody on YouTube?
Was that the dog or was that you, Ian?
No, that was the dog, because I just untangled a cord from around her nose.
Nice. You good?
Yeah.
Feels like the, you know, live show. Live show.
I'm leaving
live
listening.
Show, guys. Editing. Mark it on the edit. Anyhow, wanted the live show to know about that. Phil will do his best to edit any of that out of the show that we can. And hopefully my Canon EOS is okay. Because that dog took out a camera.
He noticed, he mentioned everything in the room besides Ian. He never said, I hope Ian's okay.
Yeah, he's fine.
My camera, my cords, the dog.
Phil has joined in the private chat and said, I'm leaving all of this in. Well, yeah. All right. Do as you will, Phil. As you will. Uh-huh. You're the boss. You are the boss, producer Phil.
Nick in the chat, this is why we can't have nice things.
Uh-huh.
Including English people.
Yeah. Lolly in the chat says, edit Ian Chaos out? Ooh, full-time job.
Yes.
Yeah.
True story.
We do want to get into the reviews for today. We have a couple of reviews today of the new Pinocchio. Not one of the new Pinocchios that's coming out this year. There are two Pinocchios coming out this year.
Oh, that's insane.
Not the Guillermo del Toro one that Netflix is putting out, but the
this
Disney
is the
Plus
live
one.
Action.
Mm-hmm.
This is the live action Disney Plus one that's coming out. Pinocchio. And then also we're going to talk about Honk for Jesus Save Your Soul.
Do it.
Which also came out this week in theaters and on Peacock.
Mm-hmm.
So that'll
in theaters. I checked and it wasn't showing around here.
Oh, really? It was at the Draft House.
Mm-hmm.
Honk for Jesus was at the Draft House. Maybe it's not anymore, but it was last week.
Okay.
So
just so everybody knows, I did not get to see the Honk for Jesus movie. I for some reason my Peacock subscription was acting weird, and then I looked on the Alamo app and I didn't see it, so
I just assumed
that it just wasn't in theaters.
Maybe it was one of the, maybe it dropped off on Thursday, maybe it was just there for like a week or something. And
I think they probably opened it a week earlier than they planned and it just confused everybody.
Thank you, Ian. This is a reference to the movie that Andrew has not seen. So yeah, we're going to talk about those. Our best ever challenge is Robert Zemeckis, so we're going to talk about best ever Robert Zemeckis films today. And then, of course, we will also do some buried treasure at the end. Before we get into any of that, I did want to make another announcement. SifPop should be normal for this week and next week, but then maybe a little bit of interesting fun stuff going on. I apparently won a grand prize. Congratulations to me. But Alamo Drafthouse did a Fantastic Fest giveaway, and of the almost 10,000 entries, the one that they picked for the winner was mine. So I and Ian, since he's in town, will be my plus one. We're gonna go down to Austin, Texas for Fantastic Fest for 8 days and watch a ton of movies. So I think what we're planning to do is record our thoughts on the movies we see and use that as one of the weeks of SifPop. So I don't know if we'll do that daily, like every evening you and I will just chat about what we saw that day, that kind of thing, and then have producer Phil, you know, put those together. Whatever the case is, just wanted to give you a heads up on that. So if you look at the films that are showing at Fantastic Fest and you're like, ooh, I'm really curious about this one, now would be a great time to DM me or something and let me know, because I don't watch trailers. I don't know what's coming out for the most part because I take it week by week. So I look at this list of movies and go, those are a bunch of movie names.
That name looks good.
Right? So I would absolutely be interested in what you guys would want to hear about, what you would want to hear us talk about. So,
and I will continue to watch the trailers afterwards and then explain to Aaron how much they ruined the movie.
It's true. It's true. It's one of his favorite things. All right, let's get into it, guys. Let's talk a little bit about Pinocchio.
Hello, Pops. Oh! Oh!
Jumping jeepers.
An almost real boy. Turn around. Let me get a look at you. I will be right here when you get back.
Pinocchio is running around loose without a conscience. Can you imagine the trouble he's gonna get into?
Wouldn't want that on my conscience.
Everybody who's anybody wants to be a somebody.
But I want to be real.
Why on earth would you want to be real
when you can be famous?
A live-action and CGI retelling of the beloved tale of a wooden puppet who embarks on a thrilling adventure to become a real boy. Pinocchio is Disney's latest, we're going to take our animated stuff and make it live action movie, but we're not going to put it in theaters. We're just going to throw it on Disney Plus. Tom Hanks is Geppetto. Joseph Gordon-Levitt, not sounding anything like Joseph Gordon-Levitt, is Jiminy Cricket. So I'm interested in what you guys thought of this. Did you like it, love it, dislike it, hate it, or is just okay? Andrew, we're going to kick it off with you today.
Oh, I hated it. This is the worst movie of the year.
Worst movie of the year. Wow. Oof. Love it.
Oh,
love
easy. It. Easy. This is the worst movie of the year.
Ian, like it, love it, dislike it, hate it, or it was just okay.
It's okay.
In the just okay
It's
realm.
Okay. It's pretty.
I'm going to put this movie on... I'm going to go low side of just okay. I'm going to join you in the just okay. So I will go low side of just okay. So Ian loved this movie. It was his favorite. It was number one movie of the year. So
that's how this is going to sound. Yeah.
So tell us what you liked about Pinocchio.
Look, it's going to be really superficial. And that often happens when, hey, you're redoing a story that's already been done pretty well the first time. Spoilery-ish, there's a few changes in this movie, makes a few adjustments, but overall I had some laughs. Like, there were a couple of moments that maybe the film didn't mean to make me laugh, but it absolutely did. So I kind of had a little bit of fun. Visually, it definitely helps watching this on a TV that is just ridiculously pretty, but overall the imagery itself is good to watch. Yeah, the cinematography is messy, but it's still pretty.
You don't have to be ashamed that you liked looking at this movie. It's gorgeous. I think there are moments in this movie that are absolutely spectacular.
Yeah, there are some like poster moments that you would absolutely just make a canvas out of and put up on your wall. Yeah, not much else. It's okay. It's nice to look at, and I laughed.
Yeah, I think for me, I think I found myself about halfway through locking into the tone of the movie and into what it wanted to do. It wasn't what I was wanting or expecting, but it was doing something specific, which I think was just being of these like remakes. This movie seemed the most willing to just be like, this is the goofy kind of movie we are. Mm-hmm. We're going to have clocks on the wall that reference The Lion King. Mm-hmm. You know, like stuff like that. And once I was able to suspend my disbelief and just go, oh, this is the kind of self-referential fun you want to have with this, I was able to have a little more time. Now, some of that didn't make sense to me. For the life of me, I can't figure out why Pleasure Island felt so much like Disney World when it's like supposed to be the worst place ever. It's supposed to be like the debaucherous place on Earth instead of the happiest place on Earth. But
it's so strange. It felt like you're just walking. Which one is the one where it's got like the street? Is that Holly? The
Main Street?
Yeah.
Yeah, what are you talking about? You're talking about the Magic Kingdom?
Yeah, the one that has like the one that looks like Hollywood and stuff.
Oh, MGM. Well, it's not MGM Studios. It's Hollywood Universal. Studios now.
Hollywood. Yeah. Anyway, it felt like you're walking down there. It's so strange. What an odd choice.
Yeah. Interesting. Andrew, what are all the things you loved about this movie?
Well, I didn't. It's the worst movie of the year.
Did you have anything? Anything where you're like,
genuinely? There's a moment that made me laugh. Other than that, I was hating everything. Okay. And it's at the very end of the movie. I'll just say a character is giving a recap to another character.
Yeah.
It made me chuckle.
That made me laugh as well.
All in one day, you know?
but that's what I'm talking about with like the meta self-referential kind of humor that it wanted to do. And I was like, oh, okay. You're kind of doing like Pinocchio, you know? Like
a little bit
here. So, and I don't know that it always works, but it once I was able to lock into it, I was able to give it a little more grace, I think, and just let it be what it wanted to be.
I need to find this amazing town where all the residents have different accents.
You're not wrong.
A single one. Tom Hanks is going to get a Razzie for this, right?
You think so?
Yeah.
He wasn't the worst part of the movie.
He's bad. He's really bad. And he's not... I mean, the guy who was Stromboli was annoying as all get, but I think
Luke Evans was kind of great. Luke Evans was going for it, man.
Oh, yeah. He was Pennywise.
Yeah, it kind of was. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's one of the... I'm not sure if I liked it or not, but this did almost have, like, Tim Burton's Pinocchio kind of feel to it almost. Sure. And I think I kind of dug that a little bit.
That's the thing about this movie I hate the most. Is the fact that I know the reason they made this movie is because they heard back in 2016 Guillermo del Toro was going to try and make a new telling of Pinocchio.
Because it's public domain.
Because it's public domain. Yeah. And they're like, well, we got to get ours out first.
Yeah.
So they rushed everything. Everything in this movie screams, if we had more time, we could have made this good, but we had to beat Guillermo del Toro.
Yeah, I mean, obviously they were going to do this at some point anyway. They're going to remake all of their animated catalog. They're making buckets of money for just redoing the same stuff. They're not going to stop doing that. I did want to talk about the public domain part of this, because this to me is, and I've been on the soapbox before, I'll be on it again, I'm sure. I think we respect the rights of creators way too much. We give them way too much leeway with the things that they have created, because the idea of public domain is there comes a point with your creation where it no longer belongs to you. It belongs to culture, right? Like that's the idea of public domain, is that it's okay for other people to take your thing once it belongs to culture at large, right?
You've earned the money that you can from it.
Right. Yeah. And I think that window should be a lot shorter. I think there may even, could be some
70, 80 years.
And then it can even go longer than that because they find loopholes in ways to extend it or whatever.
Yeah. Well, because the Happy Birthday Ladies, you know, I don't even know how long they had it for.
Right.
So.
Right. But I'm telling you, the fact that there are two Pinocchio movies this year is not a terrible thing, because if this one is bad, the other one might be good, and it's interesting to see what other people can do with properties. Imagine a world where the copyright window is, you know, 20 years or something like that. And we are starting to allow people to make their own Terminator movies, their own Star Wars movie, you know, and like, then it's just like whoever can do whatever and the best stuff is going to rise to the top. And if, you know, if Disney has already planted their feet and has made great stuff, well, that's fine. Keep making great stuff and people will keep, you know, paying to go see it. But we are so locked into a copyright intellectual property mindset that it's hard for us to even fathom the idea that an intellectual property owner, you know, shouldn't have rights to keep people from making stuff about their stuff. And it's like, you know, when it was the actual person and they created this thing and they needed a chance to have a livelihood from it, so that before others had a chance to tell the story that they created, that makes sense. When it's a multi-billion dollar corporation, I just don't think it makes as much sense anymore. You know, as far like what are we protecting them from at that point? So anyhow, this is one of my soapboxes.
That's how interesting it is to talk about this Pinocchio movie, is that we've spent longer talking about copyright law.
Wasn't there a Pinocchio movie like 2 years ago? From like Italy or France or something. I think had an Oscar nomination.
It could be. I don't remember it.
Italy would make more sense.
Another thing I wanted to talk about, and this will transition us into negatives, which most of us, I'm sure, have more negatives than positives on this. And if you think of any other positives, that's fine. But I am baffled by some of the changes this makes to the story. I don't know how the changes that happen here, both at the very end and in the kind of the final moments and some other changes throughout, how they benefit the storytelling, the tone of the movie. Like I can't, like I'm having real trouble figuring some of them out. I think I may have put my finger on the final change. There's one final change at the very last second of this movie where something that you know from the other movies becomes something that's like, is it? Who knows? And I was like, why? What? Like, why is that? And I think that is probably in relation to expense and the like the weirdness if it didn't change. So like the idea that if they kept the story the same, how do they do that? What does that look like? What is it? And I think it became a little too complex. And they were like, what if we just made it open-ended? So, yeah.
I have an alternate view on the decision. But, yeah, I see what you mean.
Yeah, yeah. What did you guys think about the changes?
Well, I think what the movie's trying to say, and I know this is what you know too, Aaron. I'm not saying that you didn't. But it's saying... you don't have to change to be you. You are who you are, and that's okay.
That's the angle I got it from, based on what Geppetto says as well. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, you don't have to... real is subjective. What's your truth?
No,
you know?
I get that.
I said, like, I know you got it, but
I
like,
think that's counter to the entire metaphor of the story, though.
Totally
like,
agree.
Because
totally
the story's a metaphor. It's not just a literal story. It's not about you being you. It's a literal metaphor for what it means to... become a man, what it means to, you know, become an adult or to start seeing the world differently and finding different responsibilities, what it means to eschew ideas of pleasure, to have ideas of responsibility. Now, there's a lot of this story that is written to really emphasize the cultural idea of the worker, right? Like that there's a real... idea of, yeah, don't have fun, work hard, you know, kind of thing, which is always an interesting one to parse. But yeah, just it feels to me like it contradicts the rest of the metaphor. So it didn't make sense to me, but yeah.
Yeah. So this is a world where seeing a wooden boy come to life is shocking, but a cat and a fox walking down the street.
Yes, you got it. You understand. Yeah, see, you know how it goes.
Acting.
I didn't think this movie looked good. You guys brought that up. I saw a lot of times where, like, Geppetto or Stromboli would be picking up Pinocchio, and there was a lot of, like, hand bleed through and stuff. So, the visuals didn't work for me. Like, can you say, like, Ian, I know you said earlier on that you said that there was some, like, a picturesque, like, a... wallpaper visuals. Mm. Can you remember any that I might be forgetting?
All of the stuff at sea. The kind of towards the opening with the blue fairy is just stunning. All of that is just really, really gorgeous.
I love Cynthia Erivo. She's
fantastic.
Great.
Is it Sabina, the other puppeteer?
Teenage Witch.
Yes.
There's no strings on you, Aaron. Andrew.
Give me two seconds. I think it's Sabina. Yes, Sabina. Anyway,
yeah, the other puppeteer lady. Loved all of like her character, what she was doing, the stuff between her and her marionette puppet thing. Yeah.
Best ventriloquist ever, by the way.
Yes. Oh, yeah. Are you kidding? Best like puppeteer ever as well. Like the spinning. Those lines are getting tangled.
I didn't understand the ventriloquism. Why?
See, nobody. Yeah, I know. Nobody else is
looking
seen.
At you. You can go ahead and move your mouth. Like,
yeah.
It's the illusion. I did like the No Strings on Me musical number thing, but it's also my favorite bit of the original, and they basically remade it shot for shot, so no surprise there.
I was gonna ask about the music. They added three or four songs, so there's several new songs. I wasn't a big fan of any of them.
They were fine, but I can't remember them.
The Luke Evans ones is the only one that was fun, but I think that was more Luke Evans' performance than necessarily the song itself.
And he's got a voice on him, too.
Yeah. He can sing, man. I didn't hate them, but they didn't seem to add much for me.
Yeah, okay. I will say the Pleasure Island, it feels cringy calling it that, but... I there were some visuals going on with the lights there that I could appreciate. Oh, by the way, this movie's not for kids. The whole Pleasure Island thing is terrifying.
No,
it is not.
In the midst of it, I think I even just exclaimed as we were watching it. I was like, "What are they? This is a horror movie.
Yeah, we're not killing donkeys here. What is going
ghost
on?
Ghost demons and
not for kids. By the way, a horrific. Villainy that is not addressed, that is not resolved, that is not like, you know, it's introduced.
Oh,
and then,
he's out there somewhere.
Yeah. It's just, it's interesting. And that's fine. Not every story has to resolve every single plot line, but that was, you know, one of the major villains of the story. But this story has always been just jump around to different things and not necessarily, you know, handle each one. So, any other thoughts on Pinocchio?
I think my biggest overall negative, as much as I loved looking at it, I also hated looking at it because there are bits of this movie that are so busy and just a visual onslaught of fireworks and explosions and look over here. If there is any character stuff to really delve into or any like heart to the story, I was so distracted by the visual spectacle and the jumping around that it's not what I'm used to from my Disney things. It seemed very super duper showy and superficial.
I mentioned the Joseph Gordon-Levitt performance. I'm not sure I like it. It's definitely a performance. The whole Jiminy Cricket character was just a little much for me. Just the design, the fourth wall breaking.
But it was the most Deadpool part of the show, wasn't it, of the movie?
I mean, except it was...
Not funny.
That's the problem, yeah.
I totally agree. It's not funny, but it is very impressive how much unlike Joseph Gordon-Levitt it sounds.
Yeah, that's like, talent. Yeah.
That's impressive. Yeah. Correct. I think even though I didn't like the performance, really, if the whole movie was like the Jiminy Cricket character, like if that was tonally what the whole entire movie was like... You know, like, oh, gee. Everybody was like that. I could have bought into it more, I think.
I think it was going for that. I think that's part of Tom Hanks' performance. Hanks has two performances this year where he's really going for something. And depending
I like
on...
one.
you like the Elvis performance, right?
I really do.
That was great.
When he's
many people think that's a terrible performance, too. Like, I've heard people talk about that. And I just think he's going for something, and
I think he's having fun. I think he's enjoying it.
Yeah, I think that's it. And yeah, it works for you, it doesn't work for you. I can see you know, parts of this movie being enjoyable, but like you said, it's not even like, I mean, I think you'd have to be 8 or 9 before I'd show you this if you were my kid. Like, it's just
teen.
No, I think you can start to I think we're a little bit protective of dark things that, you know, that our kids can start processing at some point. But if like a 4 or 5 or 6 year old, like, I would never show them this movie, which is a really interesting choice to make. So
you wouldn't show them about 15% of this movie.
Right. Yeah, that's fair. Yeah, that's fair. I don't know. The whole, I like, you know, even just like the getting kicked out of school stuff, and just there's just a lot of meanies in this movie, which is fine. It's, you know, that's part of life. But,
and it's funny because everybody's saying that this Guillermo del Toro version is like the darkest iteration of the story we're ever going to get.
So. Right. Well, I imagine if Guillermo's doing it, the idea is to take it back to its roots, which is, you know, more of like a Brothers Grimm, you know, kind of, you know, really dark.
Oh yeah,
kind of thing.
If you've never read the original Brothers Grimm for a lot of like Disney tales, like I think The Little Mermaid or Snow White, or
one of them gets very murdery.
Oh yeah, yeah. Sleeping Beauty is not cool at all.
Let's see. It looks like
how do I wake her up?
It looks like the original Pinocchio was written by an Italian writer named Carlo Carlotti. Just was based on Italian culture and that kind of stuff. So this would have been in the late
1800s.
Yeah, the late 19th century, 1883. So yeah. So, you know, the '80s. What are you gonna do?
Nice.
All right, I think we can move on. But yeah, suffice to say, not necessarily recommend from any of us. Nope. Even if we did find a few things that we liked in it. Yes, no post-credit scene. All right, let's move on to Honk for Jesus, Save Your Soul.
I just want to clarify some things before we get started. Every woman is not built for the great responsibility of being a first lady.
Pastor Lee Curtis Childs faces allegations of misconduct. His megachurch may never be the same.
Lee Curtis and I, we're going to get to the other side.
Hey, you there. Yeah, with the big old microphone. Come in closer, son. You going to see what all the fuss is about. Showtime.
In the aftermath of a huge scandal, Trinity Childs, the first lady of a prominent Southern Baptist megachurch, attempts to help her pastor husband, Lee Curtis Childs, rebuild their congregation. This is satire-ish, mockumentary-ish, and then also really serious drama-ish. So that's what we're dealing with here. We've got Sterling K. Brown and Regina in there doing stuff. Jordan Peele's production company putting this together, Monkey Paw. And I don't know, I'm curious your thoughts on this one. Did you like it, love it, dislike it, hate it, or it was just okay? Andrew, you haven't seen it.
I have not.
So I'm going to go with loved it for you. Ian, what do you think?
I loved it with two huge caveats.
So two huge caveats that don't keep you from saying that you loved it.
Yeah, they're more defending that I love it. I'm trying to like have my cake and enjoy it too.
I'm in just okay on this one too. I have a lot on both sides of the column here. This is one of those those times when you say it's just okay, where the meh part of just okay is not what I mean.
No,
this movie is not meh. This movie is, for me, was firecrackers and crickets. Like there were moments of like just pure hilarity, genius stuff.
I like theater.
and then moments of just kind of, what are we doing here? So I had like big checks on both sides of the column that land me in the it was just okay. And I'll even just say high side of just okay, just because I think overall this. I'm
Come
glad,
on, you liked it.
I'm glad this movie exists. I like what it's doing. But Ian, you liked it more than me. So why don't you talk about some of the stuff that you enjoyed?
Well, my two big caveats is that I will always enjoy any mockumentary that deals with this subject matter and brings it to the front. That is, I'm always going to have a bias towards enjoying that more. The other big caveat is I have no idea about this area of culture, and I'm so uneducated about it. I don't know how there will be stuff that is completely missed.
When was the last time you went to a mega church?
Correct, exactly.
We got one down the road.
We do. We need to get we get a giant one.
Yeah, never. Like, there is so much of this that missed me. There's so much that I think is subtle and on the nose and just absolutely isn't. And that's actually my biggest negative, is that this I don't know that this can be called satire, because it's just, there's no subtlety to it. This is just a...
Well, that is satire, that would make it more satire. The lack of subtlety would make it more satire. Yeah.
Okay. I'm trying to think how to word that. It just feels too on the nose. It doesn't feel like you have to take too much of a leap. It's just almost it's a cartoon. I guess that's satire.
Are you saying that the actual subject matter itself is already ridiculous, so it makes it difficult to make it satire?
Yeah, I think that's right. I feel like this didn't take too many steps to the extreme.
Are you saying the similar thing that everybody said, not everybody, but many, many people said about Don't Look Up? Do you remember Don't Look Up coming out with, like, the end of the world?
Yeah.
And, like,
Leo DiCaprio.
Leo DiCaprio. Like, a lot of people's argument about that was it was too on the nose, it was too over the top, it was too I don't know if preachy is the right word, but...
For me, Don't Look Up still took it a step too far. It was still a little bit... It was still a little bit too extreme.
The agenda outweighed the satire.
Because that is satire. And I think a lot of times, especially now, satire is so difficult, like Andrew said, because our world feels so over the top and strange, and like we're living in a simulation and how is this real? Mm-hmm. And like there's so much going on in that way that when you try to do satire, it's like, you can't get over the top enough, you know? Well,
Putting satire to one side, then my point still stands that it lacked any subtlety. Like there was no subtext here. This was just putting it in front of you.
It's interesting. We had, I think, different experiences, because one of my negatives is that it didn't pick a lane, and that there are subtle moments in this movie, and they kind of work, but they don't work in this movie. Like there's a real jarring effect when the movie goes from caricatures, you know, over the top, on the nose kind of stuff, to trying to deal with like the real trauma. There's stuff that happens, especially with, and I guess I'll say this as a positive overall, I liked that this movie dealt with the Trinity character specifically. Didn't know that going in, but by the end you realize this is about Trinity.
Yeah,
this is about Trinity Childs. I didn't know that, but I appreciated that. But because of that, there are moments with Trinity that are supposed to feel so very powerful and real that it's hard to justify them with the on the nose, over the top satire. So that was one of my, you know, kind of main difficulties navigating this movie.
That worked for me, but I think because I can just see that happening in the real world. Like I can see that. Because a lot of these mega pastors are caricatures, but there are still humans behind them, families, and I can well imagine, because she herself hasn't picked a lane. She hasn't picked, am I all in on being this caricature as well, or can I get out? Can I leave this?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I thought that was the most compelling through line of the entire movie, was her conflict. And so, yeah, it's an interesting one. It's an interesting one to talk about. You know what it reminded me a lot of is another satire about Christian subculture, which is
Righteous Gemstones.
What's that?
Righteous Gemstones.
So Righteous Gemstones is an interesting comparison. It's very different than Righteous Gemstones. Righteous Gemstones is, I think, more comedy than satire. Righteous Gemstones is over the top for the sake of making jokes, you know, as opposed to making a point. Now, the point is made in Righteous Gemstones, but it's not the number one priority, right?
Making you laugh is.
Making you laugh is the number one priority. Here, okay. The number one priority is making the point, I believe.
Okay.
No, I'd agree with that.
And the movie that I was thinking of as the comparison is Saved! Exclamation point. Which is Mandy Moore and many others, but it's kind of the Caucasian version of this movie. Like, you know, and again, this is one of the strangest, is not the right word, but most terrible, whatever, parts of modern Christian culture is that is so segregated too, you know, with white churches and black churches and that kind of thing. And so, but yes, the white church version of this is Saved, which I think came out in the 90s. And then this is more the African-American experience, kind of satire of, you know, modern religion and mega churches and that kind of thing. So, but yeah, they're very, very similar in that I come away from both of them going, yeah, like skewer away. Like, mm-hmm. like we need to be looking at those kind of things, even as a person of faith who believes a lot of the, you know, the same things that those people might believe, or at least some of the same things that those people mm-hmm. might believe.
Well, they believe they believe.
They believe they believe, mm-hmm. or we believe they believe, but yeah. maybe they don't believe. Maybe they just believe that they can mm-hmm. make something out of saying they believe. Mm-hmm. That was way confusing, but a lot of fun to say.
You said believe a lot more than Eddie Murphy and Shrek.
Aaron,
what are some pros you got?
Yeah, I was just going to say, even as a person of faith, like I watch a movie like this and I go, bring it, let's go, like shoot the arrows. Like we, you know, I think if you are the kind of person who wants to think critically and wants to be an active member of conversation and culture and those kind of things, you have to be willing to look at yourself in the mirror. I say yourself, you know, there's very little about these people that I identify, you know, with in a lot of ways. But, you know, there is that overarching area of faith and go, okay, why is it viewed this way? Why is it seen this way? What are the choices being made that are, you know, wrong? You know, where are the moral lines in ego and, you know, wealth and, you know, like all of these things that it's dealing with? And I love that. I absolutely love that. It's my favorite thing. And when this movie gets it right, it is skewering with pinpoint accuracy those things at the same time it's making me laugh. Mm-hmm. And there are several of those moments, mm-hmm. several of those moments. And they are the firecrackers. They are the highs of this movie. But there are also long stretches of this movie where I faded out, where I was just like, this is now just a normal movie that maybe is vying for Oscar attention. Like all of a sudden we're in like a completely different movie, it felt like to me. And I was bored because I wanted to go back to the life of the, like the actual like satire that I was feeling. So
there are some really odd choices there where it goes from the standard mockumentary style of kind of shaky cam, zooming in, fly on the wall stuff to like, it's almost like Jordan Peele stepped in and went like cinematographer on it. And it changed to like, I don't know if the aspect ratio ever changed, but it went super duper cinematic. And I'd love to know whether that was a deliberate, I mean, it was obviously a deliberate
clearly
choice.
Clearly deliberate, yeah, yeah.
What was the logic behind that? Because, yeah, those moments do feel like you're in a movie and not a documentary, which is so strange.
No, I think that's what it is. And I think the aspect ratio change is supposed to be the hint, the clue, right? Mm. Like when you're in the more cinematic aspect ratio, that's not the documentary. That's not filmed by the documentary crew. There are moments in their bedroom. Moments, you know, wherever. And so that's your pathway into understanding what, you know, what is and isn't the mockumentary. Mm. It's confusing though.
Oh,
right?
100%. Yeah.
Like if you're given that key ahead of time, maybe it's not as confusing, but I think even if you know that, you can get lost and a little bit confused.
Yeah.
I don't mind it. In fact, I've been the person for a long time saying you don't have to just be one.
Oh,
like you don't,
yeah, totally.
You don't have to just be a found footage movie. You can literally do found footage and other stuff, right? Yeah. So you can be a mockumentary and still have scenes that aren't in the mockumentary. Like that's fine. Mm-hmm. The difference is it's not just the camera that changes. It's the entire like tone. And I don't think that's a character choice. I really don't. I think it's a direction choice. Mm. And it didn't quite work for me at times. Mm. So, yeah. Yeah.
Good, because I was going to ask if the aspect ratio change was the only time you get a cue that something switches from like a mockumentary to the other, because I'll be honest with you, I never pick up when there's an aspect ratio change while I'm watching a movie.
Sure. I don't blame you.
I don't see it.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't blame you for that at all. I only become aware of it just because my brain shifts a little bit. Mm-hmm. You know, like I'll be, if I'm watching something in IMAX and, you know, has the moments where it's not an IMAX and is an IMAX, if it goes to IMAX, my brain shifts and it's like the world just became wider or something. Then I'm just like, oh yeah, the entire screen is full right now.
Yeah.
So yeah, but I don't blame you for being focused on the story or the characters and missing the fact that the black bars are a little different.
Mm. Yeah. You know? I'm curious about performances, specifically, obviously, Regina Hall, who I love, and Sterling K. Brown, who I also love. How's their chemistry?
Mm. Well, the chemistry is an interesting thing to talk about.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's...
Is it like off on screen or on camera, off camera chemistry is different?
Man, it's tricky. I think the chemistry is exactly what it's supposed to be. So I think it works exactly how the movie wants it to work, because they have to go from show couple to genuine marital problems to delusion to a little bit of here's the line, I'm not going to go any further, and then I guess I'm just going to straddle the line for the rest of my life.
Yeah. Chemistry specifically is just so hard. It's just so hard to talk about because it's kind of the point of the movie.
Exactly.
And as far as performances go, I think they're both giving great performances. I just see the gears shift again when we go from one type of scene to another type of scene. Like I can almost hear the gears grinding as they have to shift into a lower gear or a higher gear. Both are fine once they get into the gear. You know, like there's, you know, Sterling K. Brown is an incredible actor. Regina is also an incredible actor. So they know their stuff. I just think it's interesting to see them go from, you know, the more wild, wild, over the top stuff to having a really deep introspective conversation. Both things work, but I'm just not sure. It feels like the same characters in those moments.
So it worked for me, and here's why I think it did, because they have invited this documentary crew into their life, but they aren't the characters themselves aren't actors. So it's easy to put on this show in front of a congregation for 2 hours on a Sunday or however long the service lasts, but they have to keep this guard up for all of the time. And Anita, the mostly silent off-screen documentary creator, is great at being the fly on the wall and being in the background. And there's so many moments where they catch, especially Tina, what's her name? Regina Hall's character? Trinity.
Oh, Trinity, sorry. Yeah.
When Trinity catches herself and just like, do I pick this moment to break the wife, the first lady character, or do I dig my heels in here? And I feel like they were doing a really good job of portraying that these characters aren't actors, and there's just a big difference between being on camera all the time, especially with the shady stuff that's going on.
So you talk about the shady stuff, and like this movie gets deep into some really traumatic ideas.
Mm-hmm.
And that is the other part of this that is hard to navigate in a satirical comedy is, oh, we're going to talk about this topic. Mm-hmm. And, you know, how do you maintain any kind of, you know, character through line when you have to, when you start to understand who this character really is, what they really have done, what a terrible person they are. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. There's an interesting progression this movie tries to make with talking about some really traumatic real life stuff that also is worth you know, absolutely destroying.
Mm-hmm.
But it feels like it should be handled with a little more sensitivity, and so the movie does that, which I understand. But it again shifts the tone of the movie. So yeah. It's interesting.
This might be the most me and Aaron have ever disagreed on a movie. We're usually on the same page. I think they did a great job. I think I really, really enjoyed the way enjoy is such an odd word, so maybe I agree with you, more than I'm saying. I appreciate how they handled it. I love that aspect of the story kind of tears down the it tears down the comedy, the caricatureness of it. Like that is when every single character is most exposed, is when that is brought to the forefront, especially towards the very, very end of the movie with that confrontation. That's where I feel like the documentary was most real. I didn't really have an issue with how they brought it forward.
How did you feel about the ending? Where do we land here? Like, what is the movie?
Man,
yeah,
loved it.
I think it's hard, and I think that's right, because I'm sure that's an ending that most people actually have to face. Like, you want the person to run for the hills, you want some kind of resolution. There's not really a super resolution at the end of this movie. You get the impression that the cycle is just going to continue.
I don't know for sure, and maybe I need some more time and thought with it, but I don't necessarily understand what this movie is trying to say with the way it ends. Because we, again, this is a documentary situation, or a mockumentary situation at first, and then slowly shifts into a documentary situation by the end. And that's a meta outside observation.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know with what happens with that part of it. Because it's about Trinity, what we're supposed to be, you know, rooting for, what we're supposed to necessarily be understanding about her, because the movie, I believe, is giving some mixed signals on how it feels about her choices.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, totally.
And it didn't feel nuanced as much as it just felt confused. So that the ending left me a little bit put off as well.
That's got to be, because I'm the opposite. I love the nuance. I love the ambiguity. And I do wonder if that's a background thing of you being far more familiar with this subject than me, the heathen, is able to comprehend it.
Aaron, but have you ever been to a church?
I love the vagueness. I can relate to. I can understand and empathize with the rock and the hard place. And my biggest issue is I don't know how this documentary ever gets signed off. Like, I don't know how they are ever okay with this making it into the public. And I guess maybe it never is. But
I'll just say I think I have a pretty good grasp on the rock and the hard placeness of all of this.
Uh-huh.
It is in fact been a primary trauma of the last several years of my life, is understanding my relationship to the structure and entity and corporation of the organized church. Mm-hmm. And that is, you know, that is not something I say lightly. It's not something I, you know, want to wade into deeply here, but just to say, like, the idea of if the overall theme here is about what is this organization? What is it, you know, what does it mean? What is it really about? How does it impact the people that are in it? I am very, very, very familiar with that pain and trauma.
Yeah.
So when I say something like this movie is, tonally, you know, inconsistent or confusing on its message, it's because it doesn't line up with my own experience.
Interesting.
It doesn't line up with my own pattern of understanding that trauma, pattern of understanding my choices within that trauma. At times it feels too paint by numbers and cut and dry. That's, you know, the more over the top on the nose stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And then at times it feels, you know, self-serious and deeper and important.
Mm-hmm.
And so I find myself confused as to, you know, my relationship to it. Now, again, it's, you know, I don't attend a mega church. I've been to mega churches. Like, I've certainly experienced, you know, that. And let's be clear, in many ways, we're just talking about the number of people that go there.
Mm-hmm.
Every organization, every group, every community has its different things. So that, you know, and I think we know that. And anytime you have a movie that, you know, that deals with a person of faith or a community of faith, I think we all understand that that doesn't necessarily mean that that applies to every single community of faith or person of faith.
Oh, of course.
But you know, but I do, I watch this movie and I go, okay, I'm not, I associate with the trauma of where am, like, this isn't what I thought it was. But at the same time, I don't necessarily have the exact same relationship to, for one, megachurch culture, or number two, I'm not a person of color. So, like, you know, there are those two aspects of it where I'm not necessarily going to connect in the exact same way. But yeah.
Yeah, and so. Trinity is so much more, so much deeper into it. Being the pastor's wife, the first lady, she is so stuck. Segregating herself from that and removing herself from that has got to be nearly impossible to even comprehend. And that scene with her mother is crushing, because you got to believe that was her lifeline, or her, this could be this one bit of approval that, well, I need to get out.
We'll talk around it a little bit. I don't want to be too spoilery, but the movie is also not afraid to deal with very specific arguments of the church, faith, those kind of things. So the movie goes into homosexuality. The movie goes into divorce, like in some of the different arguments in just common things that people of faith say about those things, because it wants to put it there in the stark, you know, light of logic and in day, and make people confront, what does that phrase really mean when you say it? What does that really feel like to somebody when you say this to them about this thing they're going through? I think that stuff's valuable. That's some of my favorite stuff in the movie, is confronting other people of faith, the church in general, whatever it might be, with the reasoning they give to hurting people, and how hurtful and counterproductive even it is, you know? I dig this movie. I do. At the end of the day, that's again why I said I wanted to put it on the high side of it's okay. It was just, there were enough moments where I was just like, I'm not invested anymore during this part of what this is. Through the film. How long was this movie?
An hour and 50.
This felt like a 2.5 hour movie to me. That's like, man, this
hour 40 with credits.
Oh, wow. You see, that to me, that is a sign that I was checked out a couple times, because I was just like, this is, you know, this feels like it's
interesting
going on a little bit longer, but it just lost me a couple times and felt a little bit confused. But I totally get what you love about it. I love a lot of the same things you love about it. Yeah. Andrew, do you have any other questions for us about it?
No post-credit scene.
No, there is. No, there is not.
I guess my one last thing, and if you have one last thing, you're more than welcome to, is there actually is a really clever moment in this movie that I think might go unnoticed, and I just want to kind of bring it to the forefront in case you watch it. It is the critical moment, I think, of the movie, involving a character from the past of the pastor confronting the pastor. But there's this moment right before the confrontation, and it is the title of the movie, which adds a little bit of credence to my thinking that this is a really important thing that maybe is intentional. But there is a moment where, you know, they are asking people to honk for Jesus. And a character makes a choice that results in more honking, but less Jesus.
Yeah.
And that's all I'm going to say, but there's some really interesting play going on there that my intellectualism was like, ooh, I think I see what you're doing there. And that's a really interesting thought, that maybe we're saying something about how, you know, the way you get the responses is really the important thing, as opposed to the responses. And it's, I really love that.
I think that's clearly what they were going for. It's the hypocrisy of, so,
but I think that could be missed. It's subtle enough.
In the trailer.
Thank you. Guarantee it. Guarantee it's in the trailer.
I wasn't joking.
Listen, I don't want to know. Listen, I can only be so upset about trailer culture just for so long.
Super quick. I did explain the Nope trailer to Aaron, and that the the sombrero is in the trailer, and he was just like, no, it's not.
I just don't I choose to live in denial now. Trailers just don't exist. I don't know if you guys know this. There are no trailers anymore.
Interesting. Yeah. You have to clap three times now to make them reappear.
Exactly. All right, before we head into the best ever challenge, huge shout out and thank you to our amazing Sif Pop members. We appreciate you. We love you. If you've considered it, I would hope that initially the consideration is, man, I love listening to the show. It'd be nice to support them. What's really nice through Patreon is we're able to give you some bonuses, some different things like that. It starts at like $3 a month just to know that you're keeping this podcast going, keeping the website sifpop.com going. If you go to patreon.com/sifpop, one of the things we love to do is do extra content for our members. And pretty much every week we record bonus stuff for our members. Right now, we're actually every week doing a review of the latest House of the Dragon episode. So just kind of a quick look over the episode, our thoughts on it, those kind of things. So if you enjoy Game of Thrones, enjoy House of the Dragon, might be a great time to head over to patreon.com/sifpop. Think about supporting what goes on here, and at the same time, having some extra fun conversations with us. Really enjoyed our conversation this week. I think it was a really fun one. Lots of sound effects. You know it's a great conversation when you get sound effects. Patreon.com/sifpop. You're going to get a copyright strike for us, Ian, speaking of copyright. Patreon.com/sifpop. And we really appreciate you, those who support. So thanks for doing
it. Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
All right, let's move into the best ever challenge. We're going to take a look, since Robert Zemeckis gave us this amazing Pinocchio movie that Andrew loves so much, we're going to go with best ever Robert Zemeckis films. We'll go number 5 to number 1. And
oh, man, I thought you said best ever Mark Zuckerberg movies.
interesting. It's just number five, Social Network. Number Trump. 4, Social Trump. Network. Trump. Number 3, Social
Trump.
Network.
Trump.
Two, Trump. Me too.
So we will go from number 5 to number 1. And if somebody has, if you have the movie higher than somebody else has it, then you just
Trump. Oh, God, there's I didn't send those sound effects.
Oh, nice.
So, yeah, just shout that out, and we will talk about it when it's your turn. It was so funny. Andrew, you did that the same time as I played the... It was like this weird effect.
I had
like,
no
effect.
Idea.
Yeah.
That was great.
Yeah. So, let's get into it. Ian, kick us off. What is your number 5 Robert Zemeckis film?
Number 5 is Who Framed Roger Rabbit? Nice.
I think the guessing game at home should be, did Aaron push the button or did Andrew actually say it?
Oh, well, I'll have to do something like this. So, amazing. Yeah, there we go.
Yeah.
Yep.
Okay. We will talk about Who Framed Roger Rabbit in a little bit. I'll go next. Yeah. I have A Christmas Carol at number 5. I really enjoy this, this Christmas Carol, partially because Jim Carrey is Jim Carrey and I think he's incredible.
Not for kids.
Well, the story is a little wild. It's crazy the stories we told our kids 150 years ago. But yes, I enjoy this version. It's not quite Muppet's Christmas Carol, which is probably the best Christmas Carol, but it is enjoyable.
It is.
Is, not probably.
Yeah.
Oh, sorry. Is. Sorry, it's not the Muppets Christmas Carol, which is the best Christmas Carol version, other than the live performance at Silver Dollar City.
Oh, of course. And,
but I do really, really enjoy it, and I think Jim Carrey's a big part of that. And I think the animation, this was about when it crossed over into being watchable.
Valley was kind of...
Well, it's still plenty of Uncanny Valley stuff here, but it's not the kind of Uncanny Valley where you run screaming the other direction. It's just like, I think I can put up with this. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I really enjoy this one. Andrew, what do you got at number 5?
Just real quick, I was Bob Cratchit whenever we did the Christmas Carol in school. So
nice. Yeah. Very, very nice.
My number 5 is Beowulf.
Oh, interesting.
Now, here's
that's
the thing.
A choice.
When I first saw this movie, I hated it. I hated it a lot. I watched it again, and I understood what the movie was trying to say and how it differs from the actual tale of Beowulf that, you know, you're told when you grow up. I think what Robert Zemeckis does story-wise with this one, put aside the early 2000s animation style, which I have come to appreciate, but I can totally understand people not being on board for. Mm-hmm. But you just, if you like look at the story and realize like, oh, so this is Zemeckis's retelling of, you know, the classic hero story to, yeah, these classic heroes, they're supposed to be men, and men are fallible. What if men who are seen as heroes behind closed doors succumb to their desires, and what does it mean to be a hero? Is your story more important than who you really are? Is the truth, or, you know, and... I did not pick up on any of that at all the first time I watched it. But after I watched it again, I'm like, oh, how did I not pick up on this? It's so obvious what the movie's trying to say. That honestly, there are movies that are in my honorable mentions that you're probably going to be like, wait, you like Beowulf more than that?
Yeah.
And I'm going to, if you told me to pick one over this, I would pick Beowulf. It's wild, I know. But this is one of those movies that may have come out too soon. If it had come out now and people could look past those kind of not-so-great CGI, you know, if you could look past that, you got a really good movie on your hands right here.
So what I'm hearing is there's still hope for Pinocchio. That's what I'm hearing is that you know, several years from now, you may have Pinocchio on a best ever challenge list.
Aaron, I get it now. The good dinosaur is not about.
No.
That's good. It's good to hear you admit that. Yeah. All right. Let's move on to Ian.
Ian's
you're number 4.
Number 4 is Death Becomes Her.
Ooh, nice.
It's a good pick.
No Trumpy? Nice. Yeah, no, I like this. It's a side of Zemeckis we don't see a lot, I think. I much prefer this end of the Zemeckis scale than I do, like, Marwin and stuff like that. It's hilarious. It's bonkers. Everyone is absolutely giving a performance in this movie. It's so much fun. Again, not for kids, but super duper fun.
Which you should be able to tell by the poster, where there's an entire section missing out of the middle of a human being.
I love it.
Because it's a bunch of people, you know, that you would never expect to be in a movie like this.
Yes. It's such a strange cast. Yeah.
But they all know what type of movie they're in.
Mm-hmm.
And they all go for it. It's a fun movie. Yeah, that's a good pick. That's a really good pick, Ian.
I love it.
I'm liking our fives and fours, kind of dipping into kind of our Zemeckis films that maybe are honorable mentions for other people, which I kind of love. Maybe the same here, or maybe you guys love this movie too. I don't know. At number 4, I have What Lies Beneath, the Harrison Ford thriller. I think this is a really good thriller. I think this is a Hitchcock movie. Like, this is Zemeckis's closest, ability to get, you know, close to Hitchcock. And you mentioned, I was going to say the same thing that you said, Ian, about this doesn't feel like every other Zemeckis movie to me.
Oh, totally agree.
I really enjoy this movie. If you haven't seen it, I would recommend it. I know it didn't get a lot of love or buzz or anything, but I enjoy this one.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't for me, but I'm not going to fault you for it.
I appreciate that.
The bathtub scene was anxiety-inducing, I'll say that.
It's really well done. I just think all the tension in this movie is really well done, and it tells an interesting story. So, all right, so that takes us, Andrew, to your number four.
Oh, I'm sure this is going to get Trump a contact. Trump! The good thing about it is there's an R. I really roll that R or gravel that R. So it gives me chance to try and lip sync along with it to where...
Yeah, nice.
Yeah.
Nice. Yes, that will be trumped. Okay. All right, let's go on to our number threes. Ian, what do you got at number three?
Forrest Gump.
Oh. Trump!
Nice. That was great. I honestly couldn't tell if that was... Well, I knew it wasn't Aaron because I know
you're in the room. You know if I'm pushing the button or not.
Well, no, because my screen is in the way. It's blocking your hand. But I just know that you don't like this movie. Fine. I will be quiet.
Yes. So we will talk about Forrest Gump later when the people who like it want to talk about it.
Aaron...
My number three will probably also get trumped. My number three is Back to the Future.
Trump! Get out!
Trump!
Get out of here!
All right.
I thought you knew movies, Alex.
There are just two that are better. That's all. There are just two that are better than Back to the Future. That's all there is to it. I will have a legitimate intellectual argument for both the movies I have above Back to the Future.
Yeah, it's fine.
Yeah,
I think
these are bad choices.
Yeah. So.
There are five movies better than Back to the Future.
I think Andrew just gave away. Wow. He doesn't even have it on his list.
Good night.
Including Beowulf is better than Back to the Future.
You're just objectively and I know. Lying.
Do you remember what I said at the end of
I
was like,
nope,
are going to be shocked.
We have no memory. We just know you think Beowulf's better than Back to the Future.
Wow.
It's true.
All right. Andrew, I think that means we're on to your number three.
This is where I have Who Framed Roger Rabbit.
Okay, so
nice.
Andrew's got it at number three. Ian
at number five.
Has it at number four?
Number five.
Okay, talk about it.
Yeah, it's if it wasn't for Chip and Dale Rescue Rangers movie, I would have thought that this type of movie never could have gotten made again. But it's the OG. It's hilarious. We've mentioned this movie quite a few times on our best ever challenge list. Mm-hmm. So I hope people who haven't seen this movie really take that to heart and realize, okay, maybe there's something more to this movie than just it being funny. So mm-hmm. Yeah, this is a brilliant movie. It really is. It's not just the gimmick. The gimmick is not even the top thing that comes to my mind. I was like, it's a great mm-hmm. story. It's a great whodunit. Yeah. Good movie.
Yeah. I love this movie. Bob Hoskins is the last person I would have guessed to be in a movie like this, and he is easily the best part of it. He's so, so, so great. He's the perfect person for this movie.
That's an Oscar-worthy performance.
It still wouldn't get talked about today, but yeah, I totally agree. I think he's absolutely fantastic. One of my earliest film memories is watching this.
Mm-hmm.
Judged my parents massively for the age at which I watched this movie, but it's amazing. It's so good.
Mommy, who's that? That's Jessica Rabbit. You pay attention to the funny bunny.
Yeah. That's it. Why is that man getting flattened?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. All right.
Number twos?
Twos, yeah. Let's get into our number twos. Ian, what do you have at number two?
Castaway.
Same.
Nice.
So that means my number two is fairly obvious.
Yeah.
This is where I have Contact. So Andrew, you had Contact at
four.
I have it at two. Contact is one of those movies that just gets better every time you watch it. It's just the performances are great. The story is really interesting. Ian, have you seen this?
No.
This is up your alley, man. This is so up your alley.
This is probably easily in my top 10 list of shame. Just never got around to watching it. I will love this movie.
Okay. I think. Yeah. So, interesting. Maybe not.
Okay.
Where this movie goes, maybe not.
Okay.
It's not what you think it is.
I'm definitely interested to hear your thoughts once you've seen this movie.
I've been told I will love this movie.
There are many things you will love about this movie.
Okay.
It's Carl
Where
Sagan.
The story goes in the end, maybe a little, maybe no. But
yeah, the ending of this movie, there's one part maybe of this. Not. I think Aaron and I would both agree that there's like a 2-minute bit at the end of this movie that really ruins a lot of stuff. Like, they didn't commit to something.
It doesn't for me. It doesn't for me. But it might for you.
Okay. So. Okay.
But
does it end with God did it?
You know what? I'm not saying anything more. Okay. I'm not saying anything more. Okay. You know what? I'll say no. It does not end with God did it. It definitely does not end with that declaration.
But I do love, and I know you have, Aaron, I know this is your number one, so sorry if I'm talking over you, but I do love the philosophical and scientific theological conflict in this movie.
Correct. There's science theology tension in this that is really interesting. And it's willing to explore both and to talk about both, which is really interesting. And that is represented by Jodie Foster as the scientist and Matthew McConaughey as a is it a priest or a pastor? I think it's a pastor. I could be wrong. It might be a priest.
Are you talking about McConaughey?
Yeah, McConaughey's character. He's more of like a faith leader. He's more of like a
I thought he was a professor of theology.
Maybe that might be it. Yeah, that sounds right. Anyhow, it is well worth watching. Mm-hmm. You know, it's beautifully constructed, beautifully shot. Zemeckis does some things in this movie that are just really interesting visually and technically interesting. You know, the picture we're looking at on the video podcast is, you know, an example of some you know, fun ideas with like the hat that Jodie is wearing, like how it matches the satellite dishes in the background.
Yeah. And
like there's just like interesting visual touches like that that are great. So,
and a career performance by Jake Busey.
Not saying a ton, but not wrong. You're not wrong. So that is my number two. Andrew, I think that means we're at your number two.
Which was also Castaway.
Oh, that's right. That's right. Yeah. So we're on to our number ones.
Yes.
What do you got at number one?
Are we allowed to talk? Oh, right. Got it. Yeah. Sorry. No, it's Back to the Future. Of course it is. What are you talking about? I can't, like, I knew this wasn't going to get Trump.
Greatest movie
because
of all time.
Thank you. It is a perfect, perfect movie. Time travel shenanigans at the same time. Despite time travel shenanigans, it's perfect. I can probably recite most of this movie. Now, that doesn't mean it's good, but it means I've watched it enough that it makes it good. Now, if you're just of the two movies this week that open with like ticking clocks, this is the one that absolutely you should watch. Tick tock, tick tock. Love it.
Yeah.
So good.
Yeah.
So good.
I had it at number three.
You're wrong.
I'm not as wrong as Andrew, though.
Who had not it, even on the list.
Who had it below Beowulf.
I do.
No. Look. Back to the Future is a lot of fun. It is one of my favorite movies. It is in my top 200 movies of all time.
So
but it's a bit. No, it's a bit. There's a bit of nostalgia. I think there's a bit of nostalgia bounce that Back to the Future gets. It's not a perfect movie. There's a lot of nonsense in this movie.
But
you can enjoy the nonsense. Absolutely. I totally get it. Totally get it. Like, I have it at number three. So, like, you know, obviously, I think it's great. So, yeah.
There's less incest in Beowulf.
Lies. Just off screen. There's way more off screen incest in Beowulf.
All right. Let's see. I guess that means it's time to talk about Castaway, which is my number one.
Yeah.
And was Ian's number two.
Yep.
My number two.
And your number two. So
I guess
if we
were
all
winner.
Picking our, I that would be our clear winner.
Mm-hmm.
It's just nice to talk about a great Tom Hanks performance after having to think about, you know, him going for it this year. What I love about this performance is, it's still very much Tom Hanks, but he is doing some performance things that he doesn't often get a chance to do. Mm-hmm. There's something about the solitariness of what he's experiencing that he really locks into, and you believe the exact amount of his his mind that he's losing, right? Like, you really see the progression and what solitary would do to somebody for that long. When he names the beach ball Wilson, it's not just a funny thing that happens. There's literally a process that he goes through with that beach ball that relates to how the island is impacting him. Like, mm-hmm. everything in this movie is specifically about what it means to survive alone. And I think it's a spectacular film. Mm-hmm. I think the plane crash in this movie remains one of the greatest plane crashes ever to be put onto film. It's pretty spectacular.
Yeah. Terrifying.
Very terrifying.
It's the immediateness of it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think it's really well done. So, yeah. What do you guys have to say about Castaway?
Movie made me cry over a volleyball.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's something.
I love it. It's a pretty perfect character study of a man gradually losing his mind. Done in all the right ways.
And where is he?
I don't care that it's 4 hours long.
Or is he finding his mind?
Yes. No, honestly, like I know that can sound like a bit, but I genuinely mean that. I do think that this movie is about finding yourself and what you're made of, you know, and you know, because the person that comes back from that island isn't the same one that, you know, left on that plane.
Mm-hmm.
Is there an argument to say that this is a better person that's come back?
Well, I think who both understands things can be true.
Understand what's important in life now, having lost everything.
I think he both loses his mind and gains some peace and gains some perspective, as well you should if you spend that amount of time alone and then reintroduced into society. I think I don't know that there's a way you stay on that island for as long as he does without going a bit bananas.
I got a question for you guys, and I know what you're going to say. But just so it's out there in the world, because every person I've talked to about this movie, they have one complaint. They hate the time jump, and I don't. I like the time jump.
At the end, you mean?
No. The blank year, 4 years later, you know.
Doesn't bother me at all.
Doesn't bother me at all.
I think it's almost necessary.
Did
you expect to watch the entire 4 years?
Yeah. A lot of people who I talked to did. They expected it to, yeah. But I'm like, no, I like this time jump, you know, because... Yeah.
No, you need it.
Because set up in the couple scenes before, you know, like how he was going to progress. And so...
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, what do you have in number one? Do we know your number one, Andrew?
Know what life is like a box of chocolates, because you never know what you're going to get.
Oh, that's right.
Forrest Gump.
Speaking of Tom Hanks.
Yeah, mm-hmm. exactly.
Not speaking of Tom Hanks giving great performances.
Oh, get out of here, Aaron. You cannot say that isn't a great performance.
No,
it hasn't aged all that well, but it's fine. It's good. It's good.
We can't judge things on what they are now.
We can judge things however we want. Absolutely. That's the beauty of being human. You don't have to have reason and logic. You can just judge things. That's what we do.
No, I think this is a remarkable journey of a man who... kind of not in the same way as Castaway, but a man who understands the basic premise of what's important in life and understands what's good in life and what should be focused on. And it's a remarkable tale of, you know, a man getting to experience all these what we would consider amazing things, but that's not what he finds important. Like, he's like, I met the president again, I went to the White House again, and, you know, he's like, I've met the president so many times, but all that he...
It's more important that he needs to empty his bladder. That's what's, you know... I need to pee.
But, you know, what he finds important in life is Jenny. You know, Jenny, his mom, his town... Like, just all he wants to do is just mow his lawn and go on a run. Like, it's a heartwarming movie, regardless of how sad it gets at the end.
Ian, where did you have this on your list?
Three, okay. I believe. Yeah, three.
Speak on it.
Yeah, no, I really enjoy this movie. I try to avoid the depth and just enjoy it for Tom Hanks's performance and the bits that make me laugh and the ridiculousness of it. I don't mind that he pops up through history and photoshops himself into pictures and however terrible it is. I just enjoy watching Tom Hanks in this movie and the ridiculousness of this potted history of the 20th century. Yeah, I enjoy it.
Yeah.
Don't listen to me. I'm the weirdo on this. Most people love this movie. So, and I don't hate it. I by no means hate this movie. So,
do you think it's overloved or
Well, of course. I think it's overrated. But again, I'm the weirdo on this. Mm-hmm. So, like, I don't expect anybody else to agree with me.
You're both weird for not putting Back to the Future higher.
Yeah. What were you thinking?
The greatest movie of all time.
Thank you.
All right, let's get into honorable mentions.
Many.
I had Forrest Gump as an honorable mention. Thank you very much, even though it's not my favorite.
Well, I had Back to the Future, so take that.
As an honorable mention, Back to the Future as an honorable mention is an insult.
I only had two others. What else did you guys have?
I'll go Romancing the Stone.
It's mm-hmm. worth mentioning, sure, yeah.
It's a fun movie. If it's on TV, yeah, give it a watch. It's fun. And then Flight. I think Flight's a really good movie.
I had that in my honorable mentions as well. I'm glad somebody else did.
It's not what I thought it was going to be. It's a good character study, and Denzel Washington really shines. And John Goodman's mm-hmm. hilarious.
Yeah, yeah, I think Flight's good. Did you have any, Ian? Any honorable mentions?
I have Back to the Future 2 and Back to the Future 3, which I genuinely could have put in my top 5, but I decided to have Back to the Future as the one and only for everything. But yeah, 2 and 3, especially 3. I love 3. 3 is a great movie.
I have what many would probably consider a terrible movie in my honorable mentions because I like it, and that is The Witches.
That is a really bad movie.
I don't know if either of you saw it.
Nope.
But Anne Hathaway is amazing in it, and I love that story. It's a real
She goes for it.
She really does, and I think it works. But I know I am, again, the weirdo on that, but I do enjoy The Witches. All right, let's finish up with some buried treasure, guys. What's that one thing in any area of pop culture that you want to make sure people know about? Ian, you're our guest, so you will go last. Andrew, you want to go first?
Okay. Guys, I finally knocked off the number one movie on my list of shame. I finally saw Primal Fear.
What'd you think?
It's a really good movie. It's a really good movie. You know what? I love Richard Gere. That guy is so good. Like, I realized, like, the other day, I was like, I'm thinking all the Richard Gere movies I've seen. Like, this, Pretty Woman, Hachi, a couple of others. I'm like, yeah, I like Richard Gere. He's a very charismatic guy. Edward Norton. I love a good courtroom drama. Even though, thinking about it, this really isn't a courtroom drama. It takes place in a courtroom, and it's a drama, but this is more of like a character study and a philosophical debate over the system and law. Like, the ending of this movie just throws everything into, you know, contention of, so what is more important, you know, what's right or what's the law? Because those two things don't always coincide. And seeing Richard Gere at the very end refusing to walk out the front doors, and he just sneaks out the back and just stands there, and that's how the movie ends, is brilliant. It's brilliant. So I am so glad I finally watched it. Laura Linney, also I didn't mention, is great. It's a really, really good movie, and I'm glad I finally watched it.
I am too. Primal Fear is an awesome film. Ian, on your...
Oh, on my list of shame as well, but it's now just been notched up a few ranks higher. Definitely. Yes.
Nice. Well, now...
Like everything you said.
Aaron, that means that It's a Wonderful Life is now my number one on my list of shame.
Oh!
So it's up next!
Ian doesn't like that movie.
Have I seen that movie?
I don't know.
No, I haven't seen that movie. I can't imagine I'm going to like it.
I don't know, man. It's an interesting one.
I'll just watch a Muppets Christmas Carol again.
I can't see straight on It's a Wonderful Life. 100%. Like, no chance. I watch it every year. I know every word. I think it's amazing. Like, the fact that I can watch a 2.5 hour movie every year.
It's two and a half hours?
Invested. Like, it's, I, I've, listen, again, it's
I'm tired
it's
my, thinking you know, about that.
It's in my top 50 of all time. Like, I just think it's spectacular. So I would not be surprised if you love it. I would not be surprised if it just doesn't work for you. I mean, it's an older movie, and sometimes older movies just don't work for whatever reason. But man, Jimmy Stewart is just, he's just the best.
No Cary Grant. We established this last week.
Yeah, right. Okay, My Buried Treasure is actually a mobile game that I downloaded this past week and am really enjoying. It's a really beautiful and fun puzzle game called Tiny Bubbles. And many people maybe have heard of this already. And maybe have played it already. I don't know. But it's a really interesting game where it's simple. You have bubbles that you have to eliminate by getting four bubbles of the same color connected. And then there are different like little tasks you have to do. Many times in most levels, when you put a color in, there's a fish that swims around and blows a new bubble with a different color. So like there's, you know, different strategies and ways you can play it. But yeah, it's called Tiny Bubbles. It's really pretty. It's really, you know, scratches that puzzle game itch where you just want to open it up and play a couple levels kind of thing. So, yeah, big recommend from me if you want to check that out. Yeah, it's called Tiny Bubbles.
Make me happy, Tiny Bubbles.
Ian.
So I don't get to be on Sif Pop every single week, so there are movies that I've missed that I don't get to talk about.
Okay.
But on the flight over here, I got to watch Last Night in Soho.
Oh.
And I loved this movie.
Okay.
I don't care if I'm on an island. I don't care if you guys hated it. I actually can't remember what your guys' opinion of this
Neither
movie
of us really
was.
Like it. Neither of us really like it. We don't both, hate it. There's
we both agree that,
it.
That it's one of the most visually impressive movies ever made.
Yeah, it's it's really beautiful. I just think
it's a story.
I just think Edgar Wright lost his mind. Like I don't I don't I like the like, I'm, no love on it. Don't ask us. Well, we didn't like it as much. So you love on it. You love
I
on
loved
it. Love the thing you love.
This may well be an English thing because I was just. It took me right. Man, that's going to sound weird. It took me right back to being at university. I didn't have any of these experiences at university, but the feel of it and that anticipation and just the stuff they do in London and obviously in Soho. I just got the feel of this movie and I got the... This is where I like Edgar Wright to be and I cannot stand Ant-Man. But this... Edgar Wright, come back home and do things in England and do all of that kind of stuff. I
love
it.
Well, he didn't end up doing Ant-Man, so...
Sorry, no, you're absolutely right. Man, I've just still got the funk of Ant-Man just in my brain. I love all of the performances. Anya Taylor-Joy is incredible. Matt Smith is so great. Thomasin McKenzie is so good. Just love this movie. I love the mood of it. I love the quirkiness of the conceit. Just I want to take a bath in this movie. It's so good.
That's
such a mood.
That's taking a bath in this movie. That's a description I've never heard before.
I feel like I would need to take another bath afterwards to clean it off. But I just want to be in that world.
You didn't think the last act of this movie was complete nonsense.
100% is complete nonsense.
Okay,
but you have to end the movie somehow.
Okay, all right. Yeah. Okay, got it. Okay, you were willing to just go with it because you were having a good time.
Absolutely.
Liked how, yeah, okay.
100% totally guessed that. It about 6.5 minutes into meeting the character that has the reveal based around them. But it turns into a different genre of movie at the end. And I was like, okay. Choices were made, but I still enjoyed it.
That's exactly the right way to say it. I think that was exactly our review. Is it just becomes a completely different movie for the last act. Yeah.
It reminds me of the house in the lady across the street with the window and the glass of wine. Like I was like, oh, you just skipped genres on me there, didn't you? But I was still fine with it. It had grabbed me enough that it could have ended the movie like Pinocchio. I would have been fine with it.
Anya Taylor-Joy was a real boy.
I loved it.
No, she's the best part of the movie for me is Anya Taylor-Joy.
I think she's great.
Besides, performance-wise, like obviously the best part of the movie is the visuals. But
that's what I think. I think it's gorgeous.
Yeah.
Gorgeous.
Pretty. She has a presence to her. Whenever she walks in the room, everything's about her.
So good.
Well, there you go. So that is Last Night in Soho. That is available to watch on HBO Max if you have that. Tiny Bubbles, you should be able to download from your mobile game store. And Primal Fear is available to stream on Showtime if you have that. Otherwise, you can rent it or buy it pretty much anywhere online. Yep. Well, we did it, guys. We did a podcast.
Yeah, it did.
We managed to become a real podcast.
When you wish upon a star.
Thank you so much for joining us today. For Sif Poppet is part of the Studio DNA Podcast Network. You can find out more about other shows on the network at studiodna.media or by searching Studio DNA in your podcast player. Huge thanks to Andrew for hanging out again today.
Makes no difference who you are.
Huge thanks to producer Phil for producing the audio and video show.
When you wish upon a star.
And thank you to Ian for hanging out with us today.
Your dreams.
Ian, where would you like people to find you on the internet?
Find me on Twitter at WitsEnd, WHITTSINNED. Come and talk to me about Star Trek, mainly because that's all I post about. If you don't like Star Trek, I would not follow me because you'll be very annoyed. And find me on Captain's Pod, the Star Trek companion podcast, where we are currently insta-podding, reviewing season 3 of Star Trek Lower Decks, the animated Rick and Morty does Star Trek show, which we love. It's incredible. So funny. So good.
That is Captain's Pod, if you want to look that one up. Thank you again, Ian, for being here. Also, thank you to our Sif Pop members. Love you. Appreciate you. Starts at $3 a month. Bonus episodes at a certain level and some other fun perks you can check out. Patreon.com/SifPop. Lots of ways to connect with us. Feel free to leave a comment, a rating, or a review at Apple Podcasts or Spotify or wherever you listen. Or you can email us at feedback@SifPop.com. And finally, if you're having a good time, your movie-loving friends will probably like the show too, so make sure you let them know about it and that listening is much easier than staying focused in prayer when Sterling K. Brown takes his shirt off. We will be back next week with some more stuff. It is that time of year where we review movies but don't necessarily know a week ahead, so we'll catch you guys then. Love you. Bye.
Home true.
Nicely done.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.